You are listening to The Game Plan on the official Raiders podcast network. Here's your host, JT the Brick.
Welcome to The Game Plan podcast on the Oakland Raiders podcasting network. I'm your host, JT. Week 13, as the Raiders host the Kansas City Chiefs, December 2nd, 2018, 1:05 p.m. Pacific time at the Oakland Alameda County Coliseum. Big game. Lot to get to. We are loaded on this podcast. Wait till you hear the guest list. We'll have Greg Olsen, the offensive coordinator of the Silver and Black, one of the great defensive players in Raider history, to break down the defense, the legendary George Atkinson. Elliot Harrison from NFL Network, who's an historian for NFL Network and someone who really cares passionately and knows a lot about the Raiders. And Lee Steinberg, the super agent who represents Patrick Mahomes. Obviously, Patrick Mahomes is a big story coming into this game. We'll talk to Lee about the backstory of how he landed Mahomes as a client and what to expect with him in the future. Also, Lee's opinions on what the Raiders need to do in the offseason with all those draft picks. He should know he's had more number one draft pick signings than any agent in the history of the NFL. As always, we look back at the last game, the loss to the Baltimore Ravens, 34-17, that dropped the Raiders to 2-9 on the year. A tale of two halves, as always. The Raiders came out to play very competitive early in this game. I thought the Jared Cook touchdown from Derek Carr was the highlight of the game.
Raiders need an open receiver for Carr, who's all alone in the gun. Looks back over to the right, floats it, Cook's open, goes for the catch. Touchdown!
What a catch!
Touchdown! Jared Cook was falling backwards as he grabbed it.
A phenomenal catch by Jared Cook, who hopefully will make the Pro Bowl this year because he's been consistent and one of the best tight ends in all of football with 609 receiving yards and 45 receptions coming into this game. So hopefully Jared gets rewarded with a Pro Bowl berth this year. But in the second half of the game, there were just mistakes. I thought the punt return was a killer for the Raiders down the sideline. That hurt a lot because the Raiders have to be better on special teams. And then when Terrell Suggs returned a fumble for a touchdown, this was the backbreaker.
Pocket collapsing. Carr is hit. The ball comes loose at the 40-yard line. And the Ravens recover. Terrell Suggs picks it up on the run. He's looking for someone to lateral. He's at the 30, the 20, 15, 10, 5. Touchdown, Terrell Suggs. And with 5:55 left to play, the Hayes in the barn.
Ravens radio on the call. That was the backbreaker in that game. So that's what happens with the Raiders this year. They come out, they're competitive early in the game. They're in the game. They're making plays, especially in Arizona and Baltimore. The opening drives with scores, very impressive, but they have a tough time putting it together for four quarters. Coach Gruden's been telling us about that for months.
I was pleased with a lot of things. You know, the way we started the game on offense, the way we came out in the second half and scored a touchdown against a great defense. We just haven't been able to put four quarters together, and goes back to me, honestly.
He owns it there, and they got to play consistent throughout the entire game, just not in bursts. And that's the positives with the Raiders this year. There's been plenty of big plays, plenty of great moments, but they're not able to do it and sustain that throughout the course of the game. Coach Gruden continues to talk about the fact that they don't touch the ball much in the second half of these games. He's been saying this for the first few games of the season, and it's still on the table in his post-game discussions.
We didn't have the ball very often in the second half, quite honestly. After the touchdown drive to make it 20-17, I think we had a three and out. And then when we got the ball back, we were down by 10. We didn't have many possessions in the second half. I think that would help, quite honestly. I got to do a better job. I'll just leave it at that.
I think we'll all agree that Coach has been talking about this the entire year, the lack of possessions and field position. It's really the really big problem this year. Obviously, we know about the roster changes and who's been traded and let go. But once the games are played, and we're in the middle of these games, and we're watching them, and we're seeing the fact that they're starting off with bad field position, or they're going three and out. Really, that's the slide in these games in the second half, why the Raiders are 2-9 on the season. And let's not forget the injuries, too. Jordy Nelson hasn't been 100%. He went out. Martavis Bryant, his injury. I mean, it's next man up when we talk about this wide receiver depth chart.
Yeah, it's tough. Jordy, obviously not 100% yesterday. I give him a lot of credit, man, for going out there and playing, giving us everything he has. Hopefully he'll be closer to 100% this week. Hopefully Martavis Bryant shows up. He was knocking on my door this morning, which was a good sign. But I credit Jordy Nelson a lot for going out there and playing over 50 snaps when he wasn't at his best.
When I was up in Napa at training camp, I thought the strength of this team was the depth at wide receiver. They put players on the practice squad who were good, and now they're using them and bringing them up. But with all the injuries, Amari Cooper, the trade, what's happening here in regards to having players on the outside who can make plays, it's just tough. And they're going to have to do it with Jared Cook against Kansas City. Doug Martin had a touchdown in this game, climbing over the top of a pile. And they're going to have to figure out what this game plan will be for Kansas City, who comes in arguably the best team in football. It's New Orleans, it's the Rams, it's Kansas City, and the Patriots. And as we put this podcast together, and I look at the stats, it's amazing to me because we know how good Kansas City is on offense. They're number three overall in total offense. They're number three in passing offense at 318 yards a game. They're number two in points per game at 36.7. Points per game, 36.7. And if you look at the Raiders, and the Raiders are struggling to put up points, they're 30th. They're only putting up 17 points in the game. So you can do the math here. And there's a big discrepancy between both teams on who puts up points. But here's what gets me, the defense for Kansas City, because Kansas City's got some pass rushers who are really good and can go out and make plays. They have two pass rushers that have 9 sacks that we'll get into here in the podcast, and they're going to have to find a way to block the edge rushers for Kansas City. But Kansas City's total defense is ranked 30th. They're giving up 414-plus yards a game. They are dead last in pass defense. 32nd, giving up 297 yards a game. And when it comes to points per game, as I mentioned, 26.7. You got to score with this team. It's really tough to beat this team unless going into the game you're thinking about putting up 30 points. So a lot to get to here overall. Penalty yards, a stat, Kansas City, dead last in the league with 813 penalty yards, and the most penalties in football, 97 compared to the Raiders, 71. So for Kansas City, they're making mistakes on defense. They're giving up a lot of yards. They're giving up a lot of rushing yards and passing yards. Everything that would give the Raiders at least a belief that if they can stay on the field on offense, pick up first downs instead of going three and out, they could have an opportunity to leave Patrick Mahomes on the sidelines, get a turnover or two, and make the game competitive. Because that's all we're trying to do here on The Game Plan every week, is give you the best guests and insiders and talk about how the Raiders could be competitive going into all these games. And now what we've done, we've changed it up over the last couple of weeks. We are talking about personnel and the draft, and I'm going to be asking these guests coming forward about where the Raiders stand in regards to their first-round picks, their ability to have all that money when it comes to free agency and cap space. And we've added that into the game plan this year because it seems like something that everybody's very interested in talking about. So let's begin with our first guest on The Game Plan this week, the offensive coordinator for the Silver and Black, Greg Olsen. Coach, thanks for making time for us. We appreciate it.
You bet, JT. Thanks for having me.
Let's jump right in here. I'm fascinated by this Kansas City team and their stats. They have two guys with 9 sacks. They got an edge rusher with Houston who has 4. You look at this team and the way they're built on offense, they're loaded. From your perspective, and you look at points per game, you know you got to score some points. But I'm saying, Coach, maybe taking the air out of the ball and running the ball keeps Mahomes on the sideline.
Yeah, you know, obviously, you want to play complementary football, and so that will be a big part of it, is doing our part in keeping their offense off of the field. But, again, they've got some tremendous defensive players. You know, you look at, again, Houston and Ford and Jones and what they've done in terms of rushing the passer. So we'll have our hands full. But all things fall into place. Certainly if we come out of that game with over 100 yards rushing, then we're kind of staying on schedule.
Coach, you've done this a long time. When you see ranks like this for Kansas City, total defense 30th, dead last in pass defense at 297, can you take our listeners behind the scenes of why these numbers are skewed, knowing that they have so many good defensive players and they put up a ton of points on offense?
Well, that's a big part. Teams fall behind against these guys, so their opposing teams that they're playing against, when they fall behind, certainly they're in a passing mode. So They stop trying to run the football, and it goes to all pass. So that's why you can see where they're dead last in passing defense, because they've had so many attempts of teams trying to catch up with them.
Coach, what's been a bigger challenge this year, losing Marshawn as a running back or all the depth and the issues at the wide receiver position? Because I know you're proud of these receivers. It seems to be the next man up. If you pull someone from the practice squad or someone gets another opportunity, the depth chart at the wide receiver position has thinned throughout the year. How are you handling that?
Yeah, it doesn't hurt. Certainly when you lose any starting player, it's going to hurt your roster. But we feel like right now we've got some capable backs that have stepped in and done a nice job in place of Marshawn. The wide receiver position has been a little bit more difficult, again, because of the number of injuries and players that we've lost or players that we've lost. So it's still right now, it's still about development of some of the younger players and getting them experience and a next man up mentality, like you said.
Greg Olsen is our guest. Can you, Coach, talk about Derek Carr the last six games with no interceptions? He's checking down a little bit but taking shots downfield and connecting more. What have you learned about Derek Carr this season as we're going through a struggle with only two wins? What type of leadership skills did he show you this time around?
Well, he's very resilient, obviously, to go through here what he's gone through and to lose a number of key players either through injury or through trades. But he's come to work every day, and he understands that we have a vision. There's a big trust in ownership and management and the vision that they have for this football team. So it's been a pleasure to be back around him. But, again, he's been a very resilient player, mentally tough in terms of handling the situation.
Coach, with all your experience in this league, and we'll get to that in a minute here, with rookie tackles on the outside, how big of a challenge is this? Because you want to build them up mentally, and they've been playing banged up, and they have great opportunities on tape to show how good they're going to be in the future. But when they're in the middle of the game, and they are struggling, and they get to the sideline, how do you get them back on track so the team can play better in games like this coming up against Kansas City?
A lot of it is getting them help, whether it be in the protection from chips from tight ends or running backs, or again, the run game, allowing them to kind of not always be in a pass-only mode. So, they've certainly had their struggles, but there's been some bright spots for the both of them. And again, they're gaining invaluable experience right now. And, we want to continue to put the pressure on them. We have high expectations of them, and they have expectations of themselves as well. To finish this season out through these next five games. And it's going to be a challenge for them. But that's part of playing in the National Football League. And there's been a lot of rookies that have played, at tackle as well throughout the history of the league. And mm-hmm. just because they're rookies, that doesn't give them a free pass. So we've got expectations and standards that we'll set, and we'll continue to try to maintain those standards and keep those expectations high for them.
I like hearing that, because there are high expectations as they are young draft picks who are going to be the cornerstone moving forward, as we talk to Greg Olsen. And, Coach, how fun's it been with Jared Cook? What's he like in the building, on the practice field, when you're drawing up plays for him, knowing he's going to have to step up? Travis Kelce on one side with Kansas City. I'm expecting Jared Cook to have a big game Sunday.
Yeah, he's been very consistent throughout the season. You know, he's a wide receiver in a tight end's body, and it's been enjoyable to be around him. I hadn't had a chance to work with Jared before, but I'd heard some good things about him from the people in Los Angeles when I was in LA last year. So, just real excited to try to come in every week and try to game plan and find the matchups that we think that he can win on, and try to design the plays that he's good at running. So. Been a pleasure to coach, and again, we still have very high expectations of him going forward.
Coach, that's a great segue to what I want to wrap this up with, your time in Los Angeles. We just saw that Monday night football game in L.A., 54-51, Rams over Kansas City, and a lot of people, I'm sure they've been asking you too, is this the future of the league? Was that an aberration? Every once in a while you're going to see two teams put up that type of offense. When you saw that, and you look back at the film of Kansas City in that game and what you've seen, knowing the Rams as well as you do, does that excite you with Coach Gruden about having players in years to come that can go out and put 50 up in a game and perform at that level?
Yeah, there's no question. I think both those teams have done a tremendous job, both in free agency and through the draft, and the players that they've acquired, and certainly the scheme, both of them. I think if the game is constantly changing, and the rules the way they are now, that certainly it's becoming more of an offensive league and more favorable for the offense and what you're trying to do. So I think two tremendous coaching staffs that have changed with the future of the game. And I think also in the personnel department, they've done a tremendous job of acquiring talent and through the draft and free agency, and certainly developing that talent. So that's our vision that we have here in Oakland moving forward. You know, it's a process. Obviously, we're not there right now, but there is a vision, there is a plan in place.
And Coach, finally, personally for you, I want to ask about your career. As I look at your bio, from Washington State as a grad assistant to Central Washington, Idaho, Purdue, before you got to the 49ers, what was the passion like early in your career coming out of college when you were thinking, and everyone says, hey, what are you going to do the rest of your life? Why was coaching so important to you at such a young age?
Well, I was fortunate. My father was both my football coach and my wrestling coach through high school. So I just wanted to try to live up to my father's expectations. I really just wanted to be as good as my dad, or be my dad. And so he put me on the right path, and I had a lot of passion for coaching. He coached a number of sports. He coached wrestling and football, as I said, and softball, track and field. He kind of did it all. So I was exposed to that at a really young age, and I knew I was going to coach. I just didn't know at what level. And certainly I've had some tremendous opportunities along the way and had a chance to work underneath some tremendous football coaches, both at the college and professional level. So I feel super fortunate to be able to do what I do, to advance from college football into the National Football League. It's really pinch myself every day, knowing that the opportunities have come my way. And again, I just kind of try and do everything that we can to get this Raiders thing turned around.
Can you leave us on an Al Davis story? When did Mr. Davis come into your life? I mean, with the Bears, the Lions, the Rams, the Bucks, Jacksonville. When was the first time you met him, had a conversation with him, and you knew eventually maybe someday you'd work with him?
Well, it was interesting. I ran into Al Davis. I was on a beach in Hawaii in 1984 on a summer break. Two of my best friends from high school had played at the University of Hawaii, and he was out there for the owners' meetings. And I was walking along the beach, and I was a big Raiders fan. Growing up in the state of Washington. So I recognized him, obviously, immediately, and approached him. And he was nice enough to sit down and visit with me for about 15 minutes. And it had a real big impact on me and on the type of man he was, and kind of shared some stories on the Raiders. You know, he'd asked me what was my fascination with the Raiders, and I'd always said, just, again, the commitment to excellence. That I used a lot of the phrases that he had coined. So I just said, it's such an intimidating team. They're hard not to like when you're 22 years old. So that was the first time I'd met him, and ironic that I end up, coaching on
his
team.
Coach, I believe in fate. I mean, when you look back and you tell that story to players and younger coaches and family and friends, that's got to be an unbelievable story. Random on the beach in Hawaii, meeting the Maverick, and you're working for the organization. That's great.
Yeah, it was crazy. He actually sent me a book. He asked for my address, home address. And again, I was just at that point, I was thinking I was going to be a high school football coach and teacher. And he sent me a signed autograph book on the Raiders and a couple business cards. And I wrote him a thank you. I remember writing a thank you letter back to him. And just crazy, that it all comes back.
Well, Coach, you're fantastic. We appreciate you making time for us. I know it's been a busy week. You got your hands full getting the team ready for this game against Kansas City. I'll see you out there. Thanks so much for the time.
Thank you, JT, and thanks for the support.
I mean, he's got off the chart arm talent. The skill level is unbelievable. And he's got a playing style that reminds me of Favre. I mean, he's a young Favre. That's why I think Andy Reid went and got him. He won't quit on any plays. He makes a lot of plays when there's nothing there.
So real high praise from John Gruden on Patrick Mahomes, who's having an MVP year. And I wanted to bring on his agent, because I think he's the perfect guy to give us the backstory on this young quarterback. Lee Steinberg joins us, and as I look at his Twitter bio, you should give him a follow, at Lee Steinberg. It says CEO of Steinberg Sports and Entertainment. NFL record, 8 times first overall draft pick, 62 times first round draft picks, $3 billion in contracts, and $750 million to charity. We welcome him to the Game Plan Podcast. Thank you, Lee. Not a bad life so far, huh?
It has. It's been 44 years of working with role model athletes who really make a difference in the world and are very exciting on the field.
Well, I want to get to Patrick Mahomes, and I'm fascinated by this, that you have the most exciting player in the NFL right now. Take us behind the scenes on how you landed this relationship. When did it begin?
Patrick's father, Patrick Sr., is a 10-year Major League veteran relief pitcher. And his godfather, who roomed with Pat Sr., is LaTroy Hawkins, who pitched for 20 years. So they were pretty well set up to evaluate agents. And we really bonded. He's from Tyler, Texas, or more specifically White House, Texas, and played at Texas Tech. The parents really handled every part of the process. We didn't meet Patrick until after the season had ended for Texas Tech. So they asked all the right questions. It's like you could be confirmed for Secretary of State if you go through the quizzing. And we bonded over our philosophy of retracing roots, going back to the high school, college, professional community. And what we learned is that Patrick's not only an extraordinary player, but his character's amazing. He's actually a considerate person who thinks about others, is very sensitive to people around him, and wants to make a positive difference in the world. So we began, but you might remember that the prognosticator said, oh, this young man is years away because he's played in an air raid offense. He's just a gunslinger. It'll be years before. And people had him in the second or third round. As scouting went on and people actually got a chance to see the most freakish arm imaginable, he can throw balls from any angle, any direction. That comes from being a shortstop. He was drafted to play baseball. He turned down $1.6 million because he loves football. But anyway, he kept rising and rising, and there were every team that wanted to put a quarterback in the like a bun in the oven and put him behind Philip Rivers or Eli Manning or Drew Brees or you know an aging quarterback wanted to pick him, and eventually Kansas City traded up to number 10 on draft day, and he had the great beauty of being able to sit behind Alex Smith,
yes,
who was very kind to him. And that year helped him a lot because he didn't have to go right out. And going to a team with great offensive weapons has helped him too.
Lee Steinberg's our guest. So let's stay with Texas Tech for a second and some of the challenges that he had there. The Baker Mayfield transfer to Oklahoma. He wins the Heisman. His opportunity to play on such a large stage, the rivalry games. What impressed you about him as a college player that led you to believe with his skills that he would be this good this quickly into his NFL career?
So ultimately what we look for in a franchise quarterback, someone that a team can build around for 10 to 12 years, win because of rather than with, and most importantly, in adversity, in critical times, he's thrown a couple interceptions, the fans are booing, the center's looking at him like he's on drugs, the game's getting out of hand. Now what do you do? Can you compartmentalize, adopt a quiet mind, elevate your level of play and take a team through? And we watched him in situation after situation where their defense was giving up so many points that virtually he had to score all the time, which is part of the reason for the gunslinger appellation. But you could see that as everything got more and more confused around him, he just got calmer and calmer.
Lee Steinberg is our guest. He's a great player. I want to move on to the Raiders and your opinion of the situation they're in now from an agent perspective, because clearly you're aware that Khalil Mack got $60 million to sign, $90 million guaranteed. Looking back on that, considering that they could have franchise tagged him or they wanted him to come back and he did not come in the building, do you believe the Raiders handled that properly and got good picks in return considering they weren't going to pay him a max deal?
There are no picks you could get in return for a player like Khalil Mack. If you had three or four first-round draft picks, you'd be lucky to come up with one player who was a shadow of him. In football, you have these certain transcendent players that change a game, where you have to literally do different offenses and the rest of it. And Khalil Mack was one of those. So I don't know the insides and all the rest of it, but... generally in football lore, you can't trade players like that. You have to work it out. And if it's only money, that's the player that you pay because you can tell all the other players, if you play like Khalil Mack, then we'll pay you that.
But they had Derek Carr under a max deal at quarterback. So that's what I'm saying, Lee, is that you've been in this situation before. You've had some of the greatest players to ever play the game. But this salary cap era that we're in now, if John Gruden, Reggie McKenzie, Mark Davis want to reload, rebuild this organization, they weren't going to be able to be competitive with Carr and Mack getting these max dollars because it seems like they have a lot of holes they got to fill in the next couple of years.
So I hear you, but back in the days of the original cap, back in 93 on, we had 86 players and 82 had been to the Pro Bowl. And we wanted all the quarterbacks to be on winning teams. So what we would do is just reshuffle the quarterback contract. You can redo it every year. I don't want to second guess Mark Davis and Reggie and John Gruden. I wasn't in their shoes. But all I will tell you is that you can reshuffle contracts so that what looks like a daunting cap hit can be spread out by paying a big bonus and, and extending the contract further. And so I understand what you're saying, but you start a team with a defensive player like Khalil Mack.
Lee Steinberg joins us. I really respect your opinion because the Raiders are in a situation now with the Amari Cooper pick from Dallas, the Khalil Mack pick from Chicago. Those teams are probably going to both go to the playoffs, and the Raiders are going to have probably a top three pick depending on how the season ends. So going forward with $80-plus million in cap relief now, and it's probably going to go up, and all of those draft picks, what do you think is going to be part of the plan for the Raiders to turn this around quickly before they get to Vegas?
First of all, you got John Gruden, who's really always succeeded at everything, and is a great talent evaluator. And new coaches want their players, and they have a specific model in mind. They can get healthy all of a sudden. And you know, JT, the only team I've ever owned season tickets for is the Raiders.
Yes.
Back in the day, I sat at the very top row of the whole stadium, and a young redheaded guy named Mark sat next to me. And as time went on, we realized that that was Mark Davis, and we were both in our 20s, and so we sort of grew up together. But I think they'll do a terrific job rebuilding the team. It reminds me, you know, a little bit of Dallas towards the end, but they already have their quarterback, so that's really key. And, I mean, Derek Carr should be fine over time. But the combination of signing aggressively the right free agents and drafting, because you're so right, they're going to be at the top of the draft. They could have a couple picks. I mean, certainly one is going to be in the top three. And they could have a couple picks that totally transform the team. And so I think that in the long run, they'll be fine because Gruden's a great talent evaluator. McKenzie, you know, is a really good in terms of transactions, and they're going to. Of course, I wish they'd stayed in Oakland, but they're going to rebuild that team pretty quickly.
Lee, finally, I've known you over two decades. We've been friends a long time. What's going on in your personal life? Everything that's happening around you with your family, your business. What could you share with us that's new?
Well, everything's great. We've done a new thing, which is to try to put together some education for young people trying to break in the world of sports. So we have an agent academy, a career seminar series, and an online course to try to motivate a new generation of sports professionals who have ethics and values and the rest. I'm just getting started on writing a third book. And, you know, we're making plans for our Super Bowl party down in Atlanta, and hopefully we'll have another big draft class.
Thank you, Lee. I love what you're doing. Congratulations on Patrick Mahomes. We'll see you at the Coliseum on Sunday. I always appreciate your time.
Thanks, JT.
Always appreciate Lee Steinberg's time, and again, his Super Bowl party, his footprint in Atlanta will be big this year, no matter which team makes it. Now we get a chance to move on to Elliot Harrison from NFL Network, who's a great insider, fantastic at the history of the league, a young historian. And I love that as I introduce him. Elliot, thanks for coming on. How do you feel about that title, young historian?
I don't know how young I am, but I'm let me put it this way. I'm old enough to have listened to Gordon Lightfoot records. So, I don't know how you'd qualify that.
And we have fun because we could go back and forth on Raider legends over an adult beverage forever. And you know that. Let's jump in first off before we get to Gruden and the rebuild and what's happening with the roster. First, from a historical perspective of where the Raiders were as the team of the decades and now as they try to find their place going into their new stadium in years to come, this is an important historical moment for Mark Davis and this franchise.
It is. And I think they should embrace their history as much as they can, because one of the, I can't think of any other word for it other than cruddy. One of the cruddy things that happens when teams move like this is there's a disconnect with that history. And, you know, Jackie Smith, a great tight end that played for the Cardinals, Hall of Fame tight end. Unfortunately, he's remembered for a dropped pass, but he was a great player. I talked to him at the Hall of Fame a few years ago, and he said it publicly before, that he doesn't feel like he has a place to go, like a home, because he played for the St. Louis Cardinals. Dan Dierdorf said the same thing. And I think for the Raiders, I know Mark Davis has always valued the older players, but they need to bring every bit of that aura, that Raiders mystique, and the awesome legacy they have to Vegas and make it somehow be able to meld the two. Because I'm a firm believer that organizational culture leads to wins. And if you create a culture where there's an expectation of winning because that's what we've always done, I think that does rub off on young players.
Yeah, that's a great segue into John Gruden because he gets that. As you know, his press conference with over 50 players, alumni coming back as he embraces the silver and black. I know this because he's told me he came back for this team. He could have came back for 15 to 20 other jobs throughout the last 9 years at Monday Night Football and ESPN. This is the job he always wanted. And Jack Del Rio did a fine job. And the reason John Gruden's back is because Mark Davis and John Gruden have an understanding back to Al Davis on how important it is to get the franchise back on track. That being said, where do you stand with the breakdown of this roster mid-season compared to waiting till after the regular season's over?
Well, I think they're trying to find some players right now. I mean, Marcel Aitman got, 10 targets last week? That's a kid that they seem to be high on. And I know he was a good player in college. That's one of the young players that they have that I think that the kind of national fan, the fan that's a fan of another team and just watches the Raiders here and there, isn't familiar with. And I think they're trying to piece together about 8 to 10 of those guys. If we talk about team needs, though, JT, I hate saying this because it's so obvious, but they've got no pass rush, man. And you cannot win in the NFL unless you build out that part of your roster. We could talk about Khalil Mack all day. That's over and done, right? That's been cooked. But you got to go find somebody now. And the advantage if they find somebody in the draft is you don't have to pay them. I mean, it's just like a quarterback. You're renting them for cheap until you have to pay them, and then they command 25% of your roster. I think the bigger question for the Raiders, for yourself, for fans and people like me is Derek Carr the guy going forward? Because it's very hard to evaluate a quarterback when he's been throwing to Seth Roberts, Marcel Aitman, and Jared Cook is probably your best receiver. And he's a tight end.
Elliot Harrison joins us. That's a great point with Carr. And I've seen enough of Carr in the building, out of the building, the way he handles this type of pressure, fighting through the injury, several injuries and rehabbing. And I know his passion for the game. I think they have the right guy at quarterback. And as you know, it's much different to rebuild without a quarterback than to at least have that quarterback and then go get another defensive end, get an edge rusher, get another wide receiver to replace Amari Cooper. And I expect that John Gruden's going to find a way to get those guys in, also via free agency. As we sit now talking, they have over $80 million in salary cap relief. What is going to be the message to Gruden as they're fluctuating with this roster to go out and get real quality young free agents this offseason to add to all of the wealth of draft picks they're going to have?
Well, I think okay, the first thing here is, if you're going to go out and get young players and pay them a lot of money, I'm all for that. If they're young players and they're worth it, the problem is then your fan base, if you care about your fan base, is going to come back and say, then why couldn't you have paid Khalil Mack?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because Khalil Mack's not old. It's not like he's a 29-year-old pass rusher. So my guess is, even with all the cap space, that this is going to be a draft-centric team, or it should be. Now, listen, I'm well aware of the funds that are out there, and there's going to be some good free agents out there, but the Raiders are different because they decided to part ways with Cooper and Mack, who were young players. This isn't, you know, you don't want to part with young players, then you pick up the Jordy Nelsons of the world. So I think they're going to have to answer those questions if they go out and get young talent, why they let the young talent they had walk away. There's one point I want to add here, too, on Derek Carr. I think that Derek Carr is a good, tough, hard-nosed player. I don't think that it is time to bail there. I know a lot of fans do. I don't feel that way. I think, Derek, you can win with him. But how do you evaluate? You know, Marshawn Lynch has been on the shelf. Doug Martin and Jalen Richard have been your primary backs. And, again, I think Jared Cook's been your best weapon. Am I misreading?
No, Cook's had an unbelievable year again. The catch he made last week in Baltimore was amazing.
Oh, my gosh.
He wins the Ed Block Courage Award. He's a leader in and outside the building. He's fantastic. Elliot Harrison's our guest. You can see him every Tuesday on NFL Network's NFL Power Rankings at 6 p.m. Eastern. But let's go back, because my overall goal is to look at the next opponent, which is Kansas City. But I want to address Mack again, because it's important to me. Knowing the Joel Siegel, the agent situation, handling both Mack and Cooper, and I'll say this about baseball, hockey, and any sport. The reason the Raiders did not re-sign Mack, on top of the fact that he wasn't showing up, was he got a supermax deal. And I think that's what's different with Belichick and what Gruden wants going forward. He's going to pay guys. He's going to pay guys a lot of money. But if you want the elite supermax deal, $60 million a sign, $90 million guaranteed, he's not going to do that. Now, with someone like Mack, could you have franchise tagged him? Could you get him for $10 million less? I think that all would have been in play if Joel Siegel wasn't saying, no, you don't get it. We have Chicago and other teams that will pay over the market and give them the max deal. It's like the Warriors. You follow basketball. If you're gonna pay Kevin Durant and Curry, you gotta give them more than you can to keep them, or they'll go somewhere else. I don't think Gruden's gonna ever pay these super max contracts. Am I wrong?
No, I don't think you're wrong, and that's where we go back to the draft.
Right.
That's where you gotta get it right, because ever since Sam Bradford was the last guy, you know, that got that gigantic deal. Now the way the rookie contracts are structured, look, we can spin this towards the Giants. The criticism that was levied towards the Giants was that they went and got Saquon, who is a great player, right? But that with that pick that you had in the draft, you could have gotten a quarterback. And what every team is trying to do is get a Russell Wilson. Mm-hmm. And by that, I mean a guy that you can win with while he's making, you know, Russell Wilson was making like $680,000 a year or whatever, and the team's winning a Super Bowl. The problem with getting the free agents, to me, I don't have an issue with it. I mean, if you look at the Raiders' side of it, okay, they got cap space and picks for Khalil Mack. They got plenty of room to play with. But the issue that I have is that it's very difficult to sell that to your fan base. And if you don't care about that, that's fine. Okay, if you say, look, we got to do what we think's best, I'm cool with that. I'm just saying, you go out and you sign a stud for a lot of money, people are going to say, okay, but you had two studs in the barn, and it didn't do him any favors that Amari Cooper just erupted on Thanksgiving Day. Although he didn't play like that for the Raiders for much of his. Cooper and Mack are two totally different deals, if you ask me.
Elliot Harrison's our guest. Good segue to Kansas City, because I think it ties in perfectly with what I've been talking about this year. Gruden wants a team that can beat the Rams in Kansas City or the Patriots and now New Orleans long term. No chance he could have done it with this roster, including keeping Mack and Cooper. I don't think anybody will argue that. But going forward, you have to compete against Patrick Mahomes in Kansas City for most likely another decade. And what I want to see coming into this Kansas City game is that, look, the Raiders are going to have to play a team that averages more than 36 points a game. You have to embrace the shootout against this team. Now, the question is Greg Olsen and John Gruden going to open up the playbook and let everybody see what they have for next year and the year after that? How do you compete with Kansas City in a game like this in Oakland unless you say, Derek, go out and go one-on-one against Mahomes and try to outperform him?
Well, you give Jalen Richard 55 touches. Just kidding. I like Jalen Richard. I think he's a good little player.
Yes.
You know, there's a couple schools of thought. So you just threw a ton on my plate. So, all right, let's talk schematically, strategically. I'd like to see them match protect with Derek Carr a little bit more. Don't let him take a beating. Give him the time to not get rattled early and deliver the ball down the field. Now, you do that, ironically, by sending less receivers out in the pass route. But the point is that you don't get your quarterback frazzled, and you let him stand in there and complete some balls and then gain some confidence, and then maybe he's going to get hot. That's what you hope for, especially when you're undermanned at the skill positions. When you're undermanned at the skill positions, you need your quarterback to almost be a streaky player. Dare I say, a Dave Craig. That's the first thing. The second thing is, if we're talking draft and looking towards the future, while I agree with you that they need to embrace the shootout, I think the Raiders need secondary help and pass rush help in the biggest way.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't make it easy for teams. I get it. Gone are the days of winning 20-17 and hoping Doki Williams gets you a touchdown. Okay. It's now you got to win games 30-27, but you don't want to make it so easy for teams that it's like the Bengals playing the Saints a few weeks ago, and it's 52-17. You know, that's the point. There's actually a difference now between allowing 28 points and 38 points, and you have to have the personnel to be able to do that.
Wrapping it up with Elliot Harrison, one thing that jumps out at me that I can't figure out, and I watch a lot of Kansas City, especially that epic Monday night game in L.A., they're 30th in total defense, giving up 414 yards. That's worse than the Raiders, and we know how the Raider defense has struggled. They're dead last in the NFL in pass defense at 297 yards, almost 300 yards a game. How big of an issue is this for this team? They're flawless on offense. They have some really good pass rushers on defense. Why are they giving up this many yards and putting themselves in a vulnerable situation if they're going to go on a Super Bowl run?
No, it's all fair. I think some of those stats were a little front-loaded, excluding the Rams game. They actually started playing better on defense. You know, one of those underrated statistics that, you know, look, we all have our opinions about statistics, right? But is third down defense. And they are sixth in the league on third down on defense. So they bend like crazy, but they do manage to get important stops at certain points of the game. They did it against the Rams. They got a defensive touchdown. I think it was Bailey stripped Jared Goff. I agree with you that they have the pass rush. They're secondary, though. You know, they've been playing without Eric Berry. You can absolutely attack them. And I, like I said, to go back to the earlier point, yeah, you can flood the secondary with a bunch of different receivers and get one-on-ones, and that's great. But if your quarterback doesn't have time to throw, what difference does it make? That's why I'd actually like to see the Raiders match protect more, give Derek Carr time, and even with extra personnel in the secondary, I think he'll be able to find his receivers. You want to get him hot because, look, it's going to take more than 30 points to stay with the Chiefs.
Elliot, finally, since I've known you, we both have a passion for Canton, Ohio, the Hall of Fame, since I got a chance to work with Al Davis and go back to Canton when he was there. My work with Jim Brown that I'm very proud of. And from Joe Horrigan to going back there with the Stabler family for his induction. And you know the Hall of Fame as good as anybody. Tom Flores again. Here we go with Tom Flores.
Oh,
and Cliff Branch, who's a friend and really tight with the owner, as you know, Mark Davis. Cliff and Mark are so tight, and Mark really cares about Coach Flores, Jim Plunkett, obviously Cliff Branch. How are we going to change the story with Tom Flores? And I think it's comfortable for everybody to go down the Latino road of the first Latino quarterback, the first Latino head coach to win a Super Bowl, the four total Super Bowl rings, and understand with the wild card Super Bowl team how great of an achievement was that in NFL, let alone Raider history.
Yeah, for sure. You know what's interesting is I grew up I was a Cowboys fan in Dallas, and I'm sorry, but I'm going to have to elevate Drew Pearson as a, sure. a slightly stronger candidate than Cliff Branch. We can argue about that over a Mountain Dew sometime. But with Flores, I never thought of him as a kid as being Hispanic. I never did. He was just the Raiders coach. So if you just throw that out of it for a second, just on merits alone, I think there's a difference between a head coach winning two Super Bowls and a quarterback. Because I think as a quarterback, you can win two Super Bowls on the strength of your team and your coaching. But I think a bad coach can almost prevent a team from winning the Super Bowl, if that makes sense. So to me, Tom Flores is the Raiders' strongest candidate for the Hall of Fame. I also, if you want to consider the outside stuff, the way he carries himself, the way he's always carried himself, he's a credit to the game. And that may not go real far when it comes to Hall of Fame candidacy, but to me, Tom Flores is a class act. He deserves it. And now if you want to, let's put that element of being the first Hispanic American head coach to the success that he had. He took over, I believe, in 79, right? Madden left after 78. 1980 was his second year as head coach. And they win the Super Bowl, as you said, as a wild card. Then 3 years later, they beat the Redskins. JT, the Redskins were favored in that game.
Yeah, absolutely.
That Redskins team was a juggernaut. It had scored the most points in NFL history, I think, until the Vikings of 98 broke their record. The Raiders didn't just beat them. I mean, they handed it to them. And it wasn't just those years. Flores had the Raiders in the playoffs in 82, 84, and 85 as well. So... sorry, I just went on a deep dive, but I'm a big proponent of his. I think he's the most eligible candidate for the Raiders to be in the Hall, and I would put Cliff Branch second to Flores. If you're asking me which Raider I'd like to see in the Hall the most.
I always appreciate our conversations. You know the Raiders as good as anybody, plus the NFL, your career path, everything that's going on with you. Again, thanks for joining us. I hope we can do this again soon.
You bet, man. Anytime.
Again, check out Elliot. Every week, he's on often on NFL Network. And finally, we get a chance to wrap up the podcast with someone who's had a big impact on my life. George Atkinson is one of the great defensive back safeties in Raider history, a Super Bowl champion, and a mentor to me. And I wanted to have him on this week to talk about the defense and how to slow Kansas City down. We welcome George Atkinson to the game plan. Thank you, George. Appreciate you coming on.
Oh, man, my pleasure, JT.
George, this is, before we get going, the 20th anniversary of me and you connecting on the pre- and post-game show in 1998. And I want to tell this audience how intimidating you were back in the day. I had to work with George Atkinson live at the stadium, but we pulled it off with Hummer back in the day and Artie Gigantino.
Yes, we did. We had a lot of fun doing it. And, you know, it would be nice if we could hook that up again, but with David gone, that's impossible.
Yeah, losing Hummer was big.
We did have fun, and we broke it down properly for the fans. And you said I was intimidating. You were intimidating.
Well, you know what I remember about back then? And again, the Raiders were in a surgence from 98 to 2002, 2003. And we hosted some of those pregame shows outside in front of the Coliseum, in front of thousands of people and all the fans that were driving in. And I really took that as an honor, knowing that many Raider fans were listening. And we were breaking down really big games before we'd go in and go on the field and watch the Raiders play. And that's when John Gruden started with the Raiders in 98. So those were some important, fun years.
Oh, without a doubt. As a matter of fact, when Gruden came his first time with the Raiders, he turned that program around. And when he left, he actually left a team that was capable of playing in the Super Bowl. And we did that year, if you remember. And it was against Gruden's Tampa Bay. So, you know, I'm going to link that association with the Raiders to this one that he has now. When he came in last time, JT, and I'm talking about John Gruden, when he came in as head coach, he had a pretty good staff and a pretty good team. And now he's in a process, parallel that, he's in the process of putting that together. And sometimes you have to break it down to rebuild it.
Yeah, George, and that's what's been tough about this for the fans in Oakland, especially, that this breakdown of the roster is happening at this point in time. And one of the reasons why I'm behind it, several reasons, is all he's doing is breaking it down before February, March, and the combine. That's all he's doing. And everybody from the media to fans who are concerned about it, rightfully so, they have the right to criticize, but please understand that his plan was always to get a head start on rebuilding the roster. But when you do that in the regular season, it hurts your team and gives them chances to lose games that they probably could have won when the schedule came out.
Exactly. You know, when you break it down, normally you break it down after the season,
right,
because you've had a chance to see all the guys and you know who you want back and you know what you got to get in the draft. But you know what, JC, when you look at the way things are going, I think John knows already what he needs, what he wants. It's just a matter now of time. We got, what, 4 or 5 more games. And the interesting thing for the Raiders, I think the fans will enjoy seeing this thing put together. And as he puts it together, it'll be interesting to see the kind of players he's bringing. Because right now, you look at the roster, it's void of speed. And that's the one thing every team in the NFL goes out after is speed. And right now, we're void of speed.
George Atkinson joins us. And that's why I wanted to have you on this week, George, for a lot of reasons. But first off, before we get to Kansas City, this is an inferior defense, statistically, obviously, against the run. They're having trouble. And Paul Gunther's a good defensive coordinator. He just doesn't have the players. Bruce Irvin's gone. Khalil Mack, we covered that earlier in the year. How do you get these players on this roster, who are all paid professionals, to play better, get to the ball quicker, film study, do better making adjustments and filling gaps? Because, George, there's a big breakdown or two in every game that costs the Raiders an opportunity to win.
And you know what? Most of those breakdowns come in the second half.
Yeah.
So what that tells me is that there are adjustments that are not being made. And that the second half, these guys are not in shape to really give you 100% effort. And you notice the second half of the games that we've lost, the first half was good halves. I mean, it gives you some promise. You know, you think this team's got a chance to win this week, and then the second half, you know, they just disappear, both offensively and defensively. And I think that the Raiders definitely have to address that problem with players, and it's the players who play the game, and you got to go out and get guys who are hungry. You got to go out and get guys who want to play for the organization, mm-hmm. and you got to go out and get guys who will give up 100% on every down. And I think that's what John will be looking for. And this year's draft, there are a lot of good players out there.
George Atkinson joins us. George, from a safety perspective in your eyes, when you look up front, the Raiders went with some good young players, and Mo Hurst, who's going to be a cornerstone defensive tackle for this team and in this league for quite some time, P.J. Hall, then they got Arden Key. But I'm noticing that those guys, even though they get penetration from time to time, they're not tackling at the line of scrimmage. No Jelly Ellis for most of the year with his injury. Then the next thing you know, these running backs are coming in to the linebackers and into the second tier, and they're not touched. And now safeties have to leave their responsibility and make these tackles. And if they swing and miss, we're talking about 50, 60-yard touchdowns. Is it the safeties or the linebackers, in your mind, that got to do a better job in pursuit?
Let me say this. It starts up front.
Right.
First 7 guys, that responsibility is on. And that is to get penetration on the other side of the ball and make things happen. We are not getting that. And those 7 guys are so important as far as the run is concerned. So it's not funny, JT. If you get a breakdown anywhere amongst those 7, you're going to get big gashes. You're going to get big gains. And we've seen that. And we've gotten a lot of breakdowns. Like I said, it's the players that I think we don't have that have made a difference. I mean, the guys we have, some of them look promising, but then again, there are big question marks, especially on that line and the linebackers on the defense.
No doubt about it. There's going to be a complete roster change on the defensive side so Paul Gunther could have the players for his scheme going forward here, and there'll be John Gruden, Paul Gunther type of defensive players, and I trust that process. There was one play in the Baltimore game that I wanted to get back to you on, the Michael Crabtree 8-yard touchdown pass from Lamar Jackson.
I know where you're going.
And you know where I'm going with this, because at that time, I couldn't believe that Crabtree, who was at the 8-yard line, had a 10-yard cushion. And as soon as the ball was snapped and Crabtree did that one step and cut inside, the defensive back was going backwards into the end zone. And I said,
well, he lined up in the end zone.
Right, lined up in the end zone.
I was yelling from the stand, wow, you're so deep, you're going to throw the slant. And sure enough, and then he lined up to the outside. I mean, he gave the inside to Crabtree. You know, you got to get up in a guy's face and challenge him. I don't know if our corners can really challenge guys. You know, and if you can't challenge a receiver, you're going to get the results that we saw in Baltimore.
And, George, what's interesting with that is you were unbelievable in coverage, but especially coming up and sacrificing your body against the run. I think it's fair to say that either Lester Hayes or Mike Haynes or maybe Willie Brown, your great friend, would never let that happen. They would be in bump and run on the
bump
receiver
and
physically giving him everything they had for 5 yards. Why does a corner make that decision that they're going to lay off someone when they're in the red zone? I don't understand that.
You know, JT, that's hard for me to answer because, you know, I played with guys, and I'll say myself, well, we would come up and challenge receivers. You got to beat me off the line first. And if I get hands on, and that's another thing that you don't see, you guys come up and press position, but they don't put hands on the receivers. So they give them free releases. So it's baffling, and we were talking about that one play. I mean, as a player, you can't give up that much space. You got to see from your alignment. I'm way off this guy, and he has the inside. You know, I don't know. It's baffling, JT.
Well, Nick Nelson, George, is 22 years old. He's a rookie from Wisconsin. I understand that. And I think John Gruden's very critical, rightfully so, of technique. When you look at some of these cornerbacks that might be button heads in the media or looking at where they're going to be in the future, and it's technique, are they physical enough? Look, just look at the tape. Look at the tape. If you want to play on this team next year, you're a rookie, if you're a veteran, you're coming in, you got to play more physical at the corner and safety position, and especially linebackers, George, who can go sideline to sideline. That's the type of players, as you said, John Gruden expects going forward.
Exactly. And, you know, you got to be aggressive as a defensive back. You know, you got to be decisive as a defensive back, and I'm talking strictly DBs right now. You got because when you look at it, there were a number of big plays. Even by the tight ends, they were getting downfield because of lack of coverage. There were a lot of big plays against Baltimore that shouldn't have been. And the one that we talked about, that shouldn't have been. The big catch that the tight end caught and ran for 60 yards, that shouldn't have been. Those are things that let you know that you have some issues. When you start getting deep routes by tight ends and you're getting slants where you're playing 8 yards, 10 yards off and backing up in the end zone, you know, those are things you have to address.
The great George Atkinson joins us, Raider legend. So that segues us perfectly into Kansas City. And you taught me this early on, and when I sit with you during games, the Raiders for two decades, almost 20 years, have been beat badly on misdirection plays. I want you to take our audience behind the scenes again from a safety position. If you're 15, 20 yards deep and the play starts to the right and you know Kansas City is going to bring it back, misdirection to the left, and how do you defend that, George, because it's been a weakness of the Raiders for a long time.
I said it earlier, you got to get penetration. You got to make something happen on the other side of the ball. We're not getting that. That's how you deal with that. You got to get penetration from that front seven. You got to make Mahomes feel uncomfortable. You can't let him sit back and be comfortable in the pocket. You got to get up front pressure, down the middle preferably, and keeping the edges tight. And you got to cover. They got receivers that are lightning fast.
Lightning fast. Yeah.
I mean, lightning fast. So, you know what we'll see instead of challenging these guys? I guarantee you, from what we've seen, these guys are going to be playing off and they're going to kill us with those slants that will turn into 50, 40, 50, 60 yards. You got to play a team like Kansas City aggressive. If you don't play them aggressive, if you think about making mistakes or getting beat, you already beat. So, you got to play aggressive with the mindset that, hey, we're going to dominate. We're going to take the game to them. When I say we, I'm talking about all 11. And you got to get a concerted effort with everybody. And
yeah.
You got to be aggressive in order to beat Kansas City. That's the big word of the day, aggression.
Right. We're wrapping it up with George Atkinson because Kansas City's got Kareem Hunt, who not only has rushed the ball for 824 yards as a receiver, he has 25 receptions this year. They have Patrick Mahomes, who's incredible outside the pocket. Travis Kelce, as you mentioned, that tight end who's made big plays throughout his career in Oakland down the middle of the field. So did I get this right? You're saying the philosophy will probably be lay off them, give them space compared to being aggressive and bumping these receivers and tight ends off the line of scrimmage?
Well, that's what it's been.
Yeah.
Unless we see a big change, that's what it's been. I mean, we saw it in Baltimore. We saw it the week before. Just, you know, but Kansas City, you can't play like that. And it'll be nice to see these guys challenge. I would love to see that. You know, defense. Get some pressure up front. You know, put pressure down the middle. Make Mahomes feel uncomfortable and challenge these receivers. And for goodness sake, make tackles. Don't leave your feet. You know, I see a lot of that. You mentioned that early about your missed tackles. The tackling has been atrocious. I'll put it that way. You know, you can't leave your feet, JT, and think you're going to make a tackle in the NFL. It's not going to happen. And these guys leave their feet diving at receivers and diving instead of running through them. They're diving. If you look at film, like I know you do, you will see several times guys have angles to make a tackle, and they wind up leaving their feet. Can't make a tackle in the air. Just that simple.
Finally, George, the plan once again as we wrap it up. The plan, from your perspective, is tremendous salary cap relief, a bunch of draft picks in the next 2 years. Do the homework, do the research, get those Gruden-type players coming in who are faster. You talked about speed, and build this again with a roster of players who are going to bring the Raiders to greatness, not to 8-8. Gruden's not here for 9-7 or 10-6. His plan is to have the Belichick model and be great for years to come. He's going to have to do it with free agents and the draft, George.
Without a doubt, the free agents will be crucial because they will represent a part of your nucleus, and they're your veteran players that you'll get from other teams through free agency who's got experience. But, you know, the key to all of that, though, with bringing the type players in that you talked about, is the willingness of the players who want to play 100% for the Raiders every down. And you got to have that kind of ball player.
That's what you were. Every down, every play.
Every down.
Every
Jason.
Down, every play. Down. You gave everything you had to this organization.
Every play.
And you still do. Hey, George, thanks a lot. We appreciate it. We
hey,
need
man,
to do it
anytime.
More often. So you'll see George at all these games coming up. And he's signing autographs. He's outside. He's on the post-game show. And I'm happy we were able to get him on the podcast this year. He means everything to me. Thanks to all of our guests who joined us this week. Big game Sunday at the Coliseum as Kansas City is in town. Next week, we'll get you ready for the Pittsburgh Steelers. What a rivalry. That game's been moved to a 1:25 Pacific start at the Coliseum. For everyone at Silver and Black Productions, I'm JT. Thanks for joining the Game Plan.
Thank you for listening to The Game Plan on the official Raiders Podcast Network.